This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about what they're doing to Pete Hegseth. A little bit of a reckoning. We have a congressman tonight. We have a doctor. We have a lawyer. There's a joke in there somewhere, but we're not going to tell that. We're going to go do a show on I'm Right. Okay, so before I get to the Pete Hegseth stuff and something that's bothering me about what the GOP Senate is doing, I just wanted to address something quickly because it's something that is close to my heart. Maybe it's something close to your heart. It's certainly something I've talked about a lot on this show, and that's getting a reckoning of some kind for COVID, meaning punishment, some sort of punishment for the people in power, in government and otherwise, for the people in power who abused you, your liberties, your rights, in the name of a bad chest cold from China. What happened to you, what happened to this country during COVID was criminal and it was evil. It was not okay. And we are not going to let people get away with, well, nobody knew. I'm not really, no. You don't get to burn down the house in order to kill a cockroach. And then when people say, why did you do that? Well, no one knew. Nope, absolutely not. You don't ever, for any reason, get to tell people they don't get to bury their loved ones, they don't get to go to work, that it can't feed their families. You don't get to do that for any reason. And that was done in this country. This country turned into an evil dictatorship during COVID. And look, are we ever going to get everything that we need, that we deserve as far as the reckoning goes? Of course not. No, we're not. But I'm starting to hear things that please me greatly. Remember what Rand Paul said here about Fauci?
You know, we've discovered that the government is still funding Anthony Fauci. He's retired, and yet the government spent $15 million on him last year, providing him with an armed security detail and a limo driver. So he's working at Georgetown, supposedly. Who knows how much they're paying him? Maybe $1 million. We know he got $1 million from a private foundation, but he has all of this money and this great personal wealth, and we're ferrying him around in a limo driver with armed security. It's treatment we give to former presidents. We're treating him like a former president, which is crazy and obscene. Hopefully, the Trump administration will stop that on day one. But I also will send to the new attorney general a criminal referral. We sent it twice to Merrick Garland. In that criminal referral, we recount his testimony, but then we also juxtapose his private emails with his testimony. So we accuse him of lying to Congress based on evidence from his own emails. We don't have me accusing him of lying. We have Anthony Fauci corroborating that he lied by his private emails contradicting his public testimony. We will send those again. But I think most important, if we don't ever get to a criminal prosecution, even more important is that history examines and history rewards and puts him in a pile of malefactors who basically were responsible in many ways for the pandemic.
That sounds good. Obviously, we're never going to get Anthony Fauci behind bars, at least I don't think, but at least we might get something. And we got something else. We got something that it happened last night. Trump's pick for DEA chief was a disaster. As you know, I've liked most of Trump's picks. Some have been meh, but his pick for DEA is awful. Well, was awful in every way. Brianna Morello joined us yesterday, kind of laid it all out pretty clearly.
This person, if you're a fan of like DEI hiring practices, your sheriff hanging out at the LGBT whatever gatherings these days, or having pastors arrested, this is your guy. That's exactly what his resume actually says. So like I said, during the COVID pandemic, he did have a pastor arrested. Now that pastor is saying, oh, I've forgiven him, but that's not the point. The point is that he went out there, had a pastor arrested for holding service, and then touted it like he was doing some reckless deed. It's insane. Obviously, there was a lot of backlash due to all of that. So he's apologized. They've become friends again. So they're all like back to being normal. But you don't want someone to cross that line. The red line that I'm referring to is the U.S. Constitution. Okay, he had no right to do this as sheriff. I don't care what order existed at the time. Not going to overturn the Constitution just because you're a little afraid of an unknown virus that's going around. So that's the big point to all of this. He also, and this is the even, I guess, sadder part to all of this, he also emptied out his jail. Now, he said it was nonviolent offenders, but ultimately what happened was an individual who's being held in that jail went on to actually committing murder after he was released. Now, he allegedly did murder a suspect and had to be, you know, obviously brought back into the jail. But he doesn't talk about any of this. He ignores it all. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, he's a fan of the LGBTQ parades. He actually has his deputies go and he attends himself and walks in them. And then he also has DEI hiring events. So his focus, he told the local media there, was that diversity is like super important to him right now. And he's really trying to gear up his sheriff deputies for that. And so that's what he was looking to hire. Yeah. So he's pretty bad all around. Oh, and he's an Obama donor. I almost forgot that one. $15,000 to Obama.
Yeah, that was a terrible pick. Who knows what was going through Trump's head when he picked that guy? Well, because of pressure from you, Donald Trump listened, and Donald Trump bounced that guy last night. The guy voluntarily withdrawed, but Trump came out on social media and said he didn't withdraw. I kicked him out because of how he treated my pastors and people I love. That... all this, really, this entire monologue is going to be about you, about the very good things you can do with your voice, with social media now. Donald Trump listens when people talk on social media. And no, it's not just people with big platforms like here on this show. Every single one of us has a role to play. And the outrage over Chad Chronister was heard loud and clear on social media, and Chad Chronister will, in a small way, pay for his COVID crimes, cost him his dream job because of you. And so with that, I'm going to ask you to do something else, because our voice on social can be used to stop bad people from rising to positions where they don't really belong. And our voice can be used to prop people up who need our help. And I'm here to tell you right now, Pete Hegseth needs your help. Pete Hegseth is going to be, hopefully, the next SecDef, the next Secretary of Defense. But I'm telling you right now, it has become an uphill battle. The deep state, the swamp, whatever the blob, whatever word you want to use for it, they are trying everything in their power to stop Pete Hegseth from taking over the reins of the multi-trillion dollar defense industry in this country. Can you even imagine how much corruption is there? How many evil deeds are there? The Pentagon failed audits 7 years in a row. This is a criminal organization now. Pete Hegseth wants to reform it, wants to clean it up. And that's why every single day you open up the New York Times and there's a new smear campaign about this allegation or that allegation. None of it solid, none of it valid at all, but they are doing everything in their power to try to stop Pete Hegseth, and it's going to work unless we help. Pete Hegseth, to his credit, is standing tall. Sounds good. But we don't need Pete Hegseth to stand tall. We need senators to stand tall. GOP senators. I'm not worried about Pete Hegseth. I'm worried about Lindsey Graham. I'm worried about a lot of people in the GOP Senate who will be intimidated by the New York Times, or maybe they are just as compromised as many evil Democrats by the evil defense industry in this country. maybe, just maybe, there are a lot of Republican senators who have vested financial interests in keeping the scam going. So what do we do? Well, remember, politicians, for the most part, are not leaders. They are followers. They lick their finger and they stick it in the air and they see which way the wind is blowing. So I need you to start blowing. I need you to get Pete Hegseth your support, vocally, publicly. Maybe you're sitting there saying to yourself right now, I'm just whatever, fill in the blank. People love to talk themselves down that way. Jesse, I can't, I'm just a housewife. I'm just a construction worker. I'm just a this, I'm just a kid. I'm just an old man. No. All of us together rallied together, every voice mattered, and we won an election in November. Now, all of us together again need to rally behind Pete Hegseth. And maybe you're one of the people out there, maybe the allegations give you the ickies, maybe that doesn't feel good. Well, let me explain something to you. Whatever you may think about Pete Hegseth personally, we have to change the military now. The communists have not been destroying our military. They have been building our military for years, building a different one for a different enemy, and it is not a foreign one. Believe me when I tell you, they didn't kick out the unvaccinated because they were worried about COVID-19. They kicked out the unvaccinated because they were the least likely to comply with very evil orders. They didn't fill up the military with gays and trannies and every other kind of DEI higher crap just for funsies. They did it because they understood the type of person who would fire upon you if ordered to do so. The United States military is being taken over by communists for the purpose of attacking American citizens. If you think that's over the top or ridiculous, I would invite you to open a single history book. It's what every evil communist has done in every single country they have ever taken power. We would be the exception if it didn't happen here. We must clean the filth out of the military before we are a country run by the military. Do you know what happened in South Korea? Maybe you didn't hear. The South Korean president declared martial law. Their legislature, their National Assembly, we'll just call it their Congress, got together and voted it down. Absolutely not. We won't have martial law. But guess what? They do have martial law. And do you know why they have martial law? Why? It was voted down. Vote this is what the South Korean military said. The military stood with the president, and martial law it is. On a long enough timeline, reforming the United States military might be the only thing that matters. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an amazing show. Congressman Andy Ogles is here in a moment to talk about Hegseth and other things. Before we talk to him, let's talk to you about preborn and saving a baby's life. That's what preborn does every day. Not one life either. 200 a day. Women, when they start to seek out an abortion, those are the women preborn goes after. And they just try to help them. They offer them free ultrasounds. The ultrasound is our greatest weapon for life. When that scared young lady gets an ultrasound, when she hears that heartbeat, she chooses life almost every time, and your $28 to preborn buys that ultrasound. Save a life with $28 today. It's a pretty cheap way to save a life, no? Preborn.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
We've got to emphasize positive command climates and inclusion. You know, we get criticized, frankly, sometimes for being woke. I'm not sure what woke means. I think woke means a lot of different things to different people. But I think, you know, we do have a wide range of soldiers in our Army, and we've got to make them all feel included. And that's why a lot of our diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are important.
Good freaking grief. That is what we've had in charge of the Army for the last 4 years. Joining me now, Congressman Andy Ogles from the great state of Tennessee. Congressman, about 2022, that clip came out, and you were all over this stuff, have been all over this stuff for quite some time. Exactly how bad is the rot inside the military right now?
Oh, I mean, goodness gracious, when you listen to that clip, you know, the military, what I expect and want out of my military is lethality. And if that hurts your feelings, then get the hell out. I mean, we are a sovereign nation. We are the sole superpower of the world. And when you have a military whose sole purpose and mission is inclusion, no wonder Russia attacked Ukraine. No wonder Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis are attacking Israel. No wonder you have Africa on fire or Haiti on fire, is because they know that the commander-in-chief is not only, you know, cognitively declined, but when he is paying attention, he's not at the helm. He's not doing his job. We need a commander-in-chief who's going to secure this nation, secure this border, and make sure our military is trained to kill.
Where are we at with, I understand that you're in the House and he has to get through the Senate, but this Pete Hegseth nomination means a lot to me, means a lot to my Marine Corps brothers. People who are in really want to see things turn around. And obviously there's a smear campaign that works a lot on the low-T GOP types. What are you hearing on Capitol Hill?
Well, you know, to be determined, you know, I texted with Pete last night and then again this morning, giving him words of encouragement and told him never back down, keep fighting. When he came to the Hill and spoke to the House this afternoon, I greeted him, walked he and his wife out the back door. But just again, to offer those words of encouragement, he's a fighter. The DEI woke caucus within the military does not want someone like Pete Hegseth at the helm. And so that's why there's a smear campaign against him. It's that simple. And so look, if you want someone to come in and increase lethality to secure our nation as the top predator, quite frankly, in the military space, it's Pete Hegseth. And look, and he said his own words, you know, he wasn't elected president, but he is an operator who's going to work at the will of the president and execute the president's vision going forward. And that's what we need in Pete Hegseth.
Congressman, what can we do with recess appointments? There's a lot of chatter online. Everyone's an expert now on what you can do or can't do. Give us the real thing on what can be done, what is realistic if Donald Trump needs to have recess appointments.
Well, there is a procedural mechanism, and it's a bit tricky on what would trigger those recess appointments, but it is a tool that the president can use. And I would think that Pete would be one of those that would be, if you're going to pull out that card and you want to use it sparingly, let's be honest, that Pete would be one of those individuals that you say, look, we need someone who's going to be a disruptor, a change agent, and to restore the trust and the values. You know our middle child, our 14-year-old son, told me that, you know, he wants to go to one of the academies. And there's that half of me that shuddered because I'm honored that my son would want to serve his country. And there's the other half of me that shuddered because our military has gone woke. And so we need to restore that trust into this apparatus that protects you and I, and quite frankly, the rest of the world. And so as you go forward, again, I do think it's something that the president could utilize. But my hope would be is that the Senate moves past this smear campaign, past these allegations, and confirms him and gives him kind of that full endorsement that he deserves out of the U.S. Senate.
Congressman, we have a spending battle, as you always have a spending battle on Capitol Hill. And I'm sad to say, in my 43 years on this planet, I don't think we've ever won one of these battles. So how bad's the loss going to be this time?
Well, you know, that is the question. You know, I've talked to the president just before Thanksgiving and been in touch with Stephen Miller, one of his advisors, about, you know, what is this path forward? What do we have to do? And look, you know, if you're President Trump, you know, there's a lot to get done in those first 100 days. Obviously, he's going to do a lot immediately by executive order. But then he needs the House, the Congress, to come in and legislate many of those priorities, like securing the border, like deporting individuals who are here illegally, like targeting our enemies like Hamas and Hezbollah. But that being said, as we go forward, this is a tricky environment that we're in. There's going to be this push for an omnibus. Meanwhile, you know, I'm ranked now the second most conservative member of Congress. I want to cut as much as we can. But that there is going to be a struggle. At the end of the day, we've got to make sure that we don't inadvertently handicap President Trump as he comes into office. We need to make sure we don't do anything to disrupt those very important and critical first 100 days.
Congressman, I appreciate you very much. Please keep fighting for us. One of the good ones up there. Thank you.
Absolutely. God bless.
All right. We have a lot more. Let's talk to Dr. Aaron Cariotti about Dr. J and the horrible Surgeon General appointment and everything else in a moment. Before we do that, let's talk about your body and my body, about getting healthy, being full of energy, being in a good mood. How's your mood? Listen, I take natural herbal supplements from Chalk, not just because I love them and because they're hardcore anti-communists. I take a male vitality stack every single day because of how it makes me feel. It's almost 3 years now I've been on this thing. I feel like a different person. And you don't have to wait 3 years. Male vitality stack, female vitality stack, chocolate powder for the mornings, whatever. You'll feel a difference really fast once you start getting things in your body that your body is craving. Go, they have a huge Christmas special for the month of December. Go get a subscription and save yourself some money. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
What censorship did is it's not just that it suppressed the voices of the people that were censored, although that was bad enough. It sent a signal to other scientists that, look, these areas are too controversial. Stay out of them. Otherwise, you're going to lose your reputation too. And as a result, you have this illusion of a consensus that never existed on so many topics. We rob the American people of a true debate. The truth comes from people honestly engaging with the data. Censorship kills that. Censorship kills science. And I think censorship actually killed people during this pandemic.
Love Dr. J. Very, very excited for some of these, most of these medical picks right now anyway, but I'm not the doctor here. Let's go talk to the doctor, Dr. Aaron Cariotti. He has joined us before. He wrote a wonderful book I would highly recommend, The New Abnormal, talking about the biomedical security state this country turned into for a couple years. That was not a great time. Anyway, doctor, first of all, let's talk about Dr. J. Bhattacharya. I love that freaking guy. What say you?
This is some of the best news I've received in a very long time, that my friend and colleague and co-plaintiff in our free speech case, Missouri versus Biden, challenging government censorship, J. Bhattacharya has been appointed the next director of the NIH, the National Institute of Health, which funds 85% of the biomedical research in the United States. And so this is a hugely influential position in science and medicine, Jesse, as you know, because when you control the purse strings, you control the funding, the grant funding to all the universities and the other research centers, you really shape the direction of science and scientific research and the practice of medicine, which is informed, obviously, by the quality of research. And there's a serious replication crisis in research right now, that a lot of biomedical research, if you try to run the same study again, you don't get the same results, which means the research was not done well. And so we're wasting a lot of money in this area. We're wasting taxpayers' dollars. We're impeding the progress of science. When these things become politicized, obviously that's the death knell of good scientific and medical research. And Trump could not have picked anyone better than J. Bhattacharya. Not only is he brilliant, not only was he right in his critique of the COVID policies, even though he and I and others were censored. You saw in that video you just showed one of our other co-plaintiffs in the Missouri v. Biden case, Martin Kulldorff, formerly of Harvard, another world-renowned epidemiologist who is censored. And there's something very sort of poetic. There's a kind of poetic justice about Jay being appointed director of NIH, because the former director of NIH, Francis Collins, a man who did not cover himself in glory during the pandemic, wrote an email. We now know, we got a FOIA request. He wrote in an email to Anthony Fauci during the pandemic that when Jay and Martin published the Great Barrington Declaration, which was advocating for a traditional evidence-based approach to public health during the pandemic, Collins told Fauci that we need a, quote, swift and devastating takedown of the Great Barrington Declaration. This was something the NIH was orchestrating behind the scenes to censor and silence critics of our COVID policies. Not, hey, let's sit down with this Harvard and Stanford epidemiologist and debate the merits of our proposed lockdowns and school closures and mask mandates and other policies. No, instead of just sitting down and having an open debate the way science should be conducted, they said we need a swift and devastating, basically character assassination of these people. So the former NIH director, I think, has to be looking around at the devastation hopefully caused under his watch, and maybe he'll recognize that it's time for a new leadership. But in any case, President Trump has recognized that it's time for new leadership. So Jay Bhattacharya is the perfect choice for the NIH director. He's a man of enormous integrity as well. It's going to sound like I'm trying to canonize him a saint or something, but he is a man with just enormous integrity and honesty and fundamental human decency. And these are the kind of people that we want in leadership positions. The FDA commissioner, Marty McCarry, is another great guy. I've gotten to know Marty over the last couple of years. Marty is not beholden to the big pharma interests. He's an independent thinker, Johns Hopkins physician, written some terrific books on cost savings and other reforms that have to happen in medicine. And the biggest problem with the FDA right now is that they're captured by the very industry that they are supposed to regulate, which is the pharmaceutical industry. And so Marty is another really solid, terrific pick for FDA commissioner. So those two guys, I'm so happy about. And of course, RFK Jr. as the new Health and Human Services Secretary, which is a large agency that oversees the NIH, the FDA, and the CDC, among several other government agencies. So the Department of Health and Human Services is, I think, going to be in very good hands under the leadership of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I'll tell you a brief story about Kennedy just to kind of illustrate his character as well. And it's going to perhaps sound like name dropping and a shameless plug for my book, but Bobby actually called me about a year and a half ago. And he said in his, scratchy deep voice, "Aaron, I'm reading your book. And it says here on page such and such that so-and-so was affiliated with such and such. And do you have a footnote on that? Do you have a reference for that?" I said, "Well, Bobby, I got that information from this person. You need to give him a call. He can give you the source on that." And I tell this story because unlike most people, I think, in positions of leadership that take a sort of 30,000 foot view on the issues that they're dealing with, RFK Jr. is a man who knows what he's talking about. He pays attention to details. And that little anecdote is just an illustration of the fact that on the issues that he's dealing with, he does a deep dive. And anyone who's listened to him in interviews will tell you, wow, this guy really knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about. He's citing facts. He's citing evidence. He is persuasive and he's compelling because he's a man of enormous intelligence that has done a really deep dive on the issues that he is focused on. And I think, sad to say, that's also another rare quality among government bureaucrats and among people that are running the administrative state. It was certainly a rare quality in the previous administration and the leadership that we had at places like the Department of Health and Human Services and the sub-agencies like our public health agencies. So all of this, those three appointments to me feel like a real breath of fresh air.
Doctor, how bad are Dr. Oz, Dr. with Dr. Jeanette, whatever her name is. Look, yeah. I love the other ones. I love all the ones you just named. I saw these ones and I started banging my head off the desk. Should we be concerned?
Well, I'm not impressed with the Surgeon General appointment, Dr. Jeanette Nischwat, at least the little I've seen her. I don't know her personally. So a big caveat, big grain of salt on this one. I can vouch for the three that I mentioned because they're personal friends. I guess I'll say the jury's still out. Let's see what they do. But some of these feel a little bit like, I don't know, sort of celebrity appointments. Maybe people that haven't drilled down and really done the work necessary to prepare for a role like that. But I will suspend judgment until I see what they actually do. The CDC appointment, Dave Weldon, is an interesting pick, and I'm cautiously optimistic. He is a physician and former member of the House of Representatives. And I'm not an expert on him or his policies, but I will say that the Weldon Amendment that he pushed through during his time in Congress has been a very important piece of legislation for conscience protection for healthcare workers. Healthcare workers that do not want to participate in things like abortion or so-called gender affirmative care because they believe that it's bad medicine and, you know, it may run contrary to their moral convictions. Federal law actually protects those doctors and nurses from basically being forced to do things that they think are medically inappropriate. And that's a little known piece of legislation. It hasn't always been enforced by HHS department with the vigor that it should have been. It was enforced under my friend Roger Severino, who was formerly head of the Office of Civil Rights in HHS. Roger did a really good job of enforcing that law. It was not enforced under the Biden administration, but it's a really important law that we have on the books that Dave Weldon, during his time in Congress, was instrumental. Obviously, the law bears his name because he was the main sponsor of that bill. So I think he's a person of integrity, and the CDC has been politicized in ways that are just totally unacceptable. And hopefully, under his leadership, we can bring that agency sort of back in line with sound public policy and good science and medicine. So we'll see what happens. The Surgeon General, I think, is largely symbolic. You know, I'm not sure she actually has a lot of a power or sway. She's influential because, you know, if the Surgeon General slaps a warning on something, people actually do pay attention to that. And so her word does carry some weight. But we'll have to see, you know, she's also going to be working in an administration that has some other good picks around her. And sometimes having good people around you can have an influence on you. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. I guess nobody bats 1,000. You can't win them all. And politics is the art of compromise. Yeah. But I think overall, from where we are now to where we're going to be in a month, we're going to see sort of tremendous progress.
Doctor, appreciate you as always. Please come back anytime. All right. Supreme Court, big hearing today. What happened? Well, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Josh Hammer is, though. He's going to join us next before we get to Josh. Do you want to sleep good every night? It's something, you know, you do it as a child and you take it for granted. When you're a kid, you sleep like a baby every single night. And then as you get older and your shoulder hurts and the stresses of life come, there are nights where you can't. But there's a ton of things you can take to help you sleep. But there's only one thing I've ever taken that I still feel good when I wake up. Every other thing I've ever taken in my life, if I take it to sleep, I wake up and I'm dying still. Not dream powder from Beam. It's natural. Melatonin, things like that. It's a cup of hot chocolate. You just have a delicious cup of hot chocolate before bed and you drift off to sleep and you wake up feeling great, like you didn't take anything. Sound good? Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. There was a big Supreme Court hearing today. It was about the mutilation of children in this country, something amazingly we do here, and it's lawful. Still having a hard time wrapping my mind around how the United States of America became that. But either way, I want to know what happened at SCOTUS today. So joining me now, my friend, soon-to-be father, Mr. Josh Hammer, host of the wonderful America on Trial. Josh, okay, the SCOTUS hearing, I caught a little snippet here and a little snippet there, but since you're a lawyer and a huge nerd, I'm sure you watched the whole thing. What happened?
Lawyer and a huge nerd. I couldn't ask for a more flattering intro, my good friend. I'm pretty sure that Tennessee is going to win this case. So just some context here. So Tennessee passed a law called Senate Bill 1. It bans the use of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. I mean, you describe it accurately. I mean, it's kiddie chemical castration. That is actually, it's genital mutilation. Whoa. That is actually what Tennessee is trying to ban here when it comes to minors under the age of 18 there. The claim that the other side is making, and by the way, this case is styled United States versus Scrimeti. Scrimeti is the Attorney General of Tennessee. The United States means the United States because the Biden DOJ actually stepped in to sue this law here. By the way, Donald Trump should drop this lawsuit from his DOJ on day one, January 20th of 2025. He has the authority to do so. But In any event, today we have your oral arguments here. And I think it's going to go Tennessee's way. So you saw Chief Justice John Roberts. He's obviously won the swing votes. He seemed very skeptical of the United States' argument that this law is unconstitutional. They're making, Jesse, they're making a ludicrous 14th Amendment argument. I mean, they're making this argument basically that this amounts to discrimination against transgender people who are a protected class, the same way that race and sex are protected classes when it comes to American constitutional law. It's wrong on just so many different levels here. And I'm pretty sure that the votes are going to be there to uphold the constitutionality of this law. I do note that I was a little concerned that Justice Gorsuch was very silent. He was the one who went wobbly in the 2020 case, the Bostock case, back when they did a similar stunt where they read transgenderism into Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So I was a little caught off guard by Gorsuch's reticence, his lack of asking any questions of counsel today. But even if he goes wobbly, and I don't think he will, but even if he does, the fact that Roberts is on board, Kavanaugh, Barrett seem like they're heading the right way there, I'm pretty sure the votes are there. I'll make just one final observation. Because this case is just such a ludicrous constitutional argument, you had some of the liberal justices saying some really, really crazy things. But in a case of this culture war magnitude, I think it really is accentuated here. And I'll give just one example. Ketanji Brown Jackson, who's, of course, Joe Biden's only nominee to SCOTUS, she was basically analogizing this act in Tennessee to the bans on interracial marriage that were overturned by the Loving versus Virginia case of the U.S. Supreme Court in 1967. She literally made that argument. I kid you not there. It's right there in the record there. Again, Jesse, more to the point here, because this is obviously happening in the background, the context of the presidential election. Donald Trump defeats Kamala Harris. She had that crazy transgender statement back in 2019. Donald Trump had a very effective ad on that. And I think the fact that Ketanji Brown Jackson asked that very question today and phrased it along those lines, this is why they lose, Jesse. This ultimately is why the left loses there. And personally, as someone who wishes them nothing but the worst, I'm very happy that they haven't learned any lessons, apparently.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, I'm going to ask you to do a little crystal ball thing before we get to the Hunter Biden stuff. Donald Trump's going to assume the presidency January 20th, 2025. That's 4 years. Are there justices, ours or theirs, you think he's going to be able to replace? Do you see that on the horizon?
I do. So the very popular rumor in legal conservative circles is that Justice Sam Alito is probably more likely than not to resign, probably over the next 2 years, just given the fact that Republicans control the Senate right now, 53 to 47. The Senate map in 2026 is not quite as auspicious, so it makes sense that you would do it sooner rather than later. The rumor is that Alito has been kind of looking to get out for a while. I have no kind of inside knowledge as to the veracity of that, but this would be a very good time for him to do so. Then the question, of course, is whether Clarence Thomas does the same thing there. I genuinely don't know the answer to that. I view it as pretty much a 50-50 proposition there, but I think Alito is probably the likelier of the two to step down over the next year or two. But it's entirely possible that they both do, which would actually open up two vacancies prior to the 2026 midterms if they happen 1 year after the other. As far as other vacancies, you know, Jesse, sometimes you just don't know. I mean, you know, Ginsburg passed away in 2020. That opened up a seat for Amy Coney Barrett there. You know, there's always the possibility of a family medical emergency, something like that there. But yes, I'm pretty optimistic that Donald Trump's going to have at least one, possibly two, or potentially even more openings on the U.S. Supreme Court over the course of this next term there. And because of the fact that he had three picks the first time around, he could actually have an outright majority of five out of the nine justices there. That is a lasting generational legacy if there ever is one there. So I hope that he gets that opportunity.
Yeah, I hope so too. All right, Josh, let's talk about the absurdity of the Hunter Biden pardon. Nobody's surprised. No one's surprised that Joe Biden pardoned his dirtball son. Joe's a dirtball. He raised a dirtball. We all get all that. But even me, even cynical Jesse, was shocked at the breadth of the pardon, a backdated 11-year pardon. Josh, please, take it away.
Yeah, Jesse, I think you and I have the exact same thoughts on this. So, I mean, I was constantly, over the course of this past year, trying to prepare my audience on America on Trial with Josh Hammer for this exact thing. I constantly said, do not believe this lying man for a second. He is obviously going to pardon Hunter Biden on his way out the door. Do not, even for the slightest bit of time, take his words even remotely seriously that he trusts the justice system. What a load of crap. I mean, Joe Biden has been an inveterate chronic liar his entire life, going all the way back, speaking of Clarence Thomas, going all the way back to the Clarence Thomas hearings back in 91 when he was parroting Anita Hill's lies about sexual harassment in the workplace. Joe Biden was working with Ted Kennedy to nuke Bob Bork back in 87. He's been a liar his entire political career, so I never for a second believed that. But like you, I also was caught at least a little off guard by the fact that he was not even trying to hide the fact that they were clearly tying this to Burisma. January 2014. How stupid, Jesse, do they think we are? I mean, what happened to the spring of 2014? Have we been sleeping under a rock for the past 6 years? Dude joins the board of Burisma. He's bagging in oodles and oodles of cash, millions and millions a year there. I mean, it's just so farcical, honestly. And even the way that they rolled this pardon out was very legally sloppy from a lawyer perspective. Because they actually pardoned him then for all crimes up to the very evening of the day that the pardon came in this past Sunday. But they said this around 7 p.m. Eastern time. So Hunter Biden basically had 5 free hours to commit whatever federal crime he wanted to. You want to like traffic prostitutes across state lines? You want to commit some sort of much worse attempts? Whatever it is, go for it. Drug laws, we know he likes those laws. I mean, he basically had 5 hours of total free reign there. So I mean, and the whole thing was ridiculously sloppy. Unfortunately, from a constitutional perspective, the president's pardon power is quite plenary. It's basically absolute. So this is going to stand, unfortunately, there. But what, man, what an absolute joke.
Gosh, Josh, do you think this paves the way, hopefully this paves the way for all those January 6th political prisoners to get off scot-free? Surely it does, right? Surely Trump walks in and says, hey, all of you, go home.
So that definitely is my hope, and that is my expectation as well. And that is probably the number one silver lining of this particular pardon, this particularly self-serving, corrupt act of venality, the likes of which we have never seen in modern American political history. My hope is that Donald Trump does basically turn the tables come January 20th, 2025. I would think that the J6ers are going to receive a mass pardon around the first day or two in office. I will note that the Trump transition team has been a little more sober in their language. They're saying that it'll be a case-by-case ad hoc adjudication as to who receives a pardon there. That's fine. That's lawyer speak. That's legal language there. But especially in the aftermath of this, I think you and I both hope, and I do indeed expect that sort of pardon is going to happen. More generally speaking, though, kind of just zooming out for a second here, the Hunter Biden stuff, the lawfare stuff, Jesse, in light of these recent developments, what's good for the goose is surely good for the gander, right? I mean, a lot of people are just telling Donald Trump to take the moral high ground and be the bigger man come January 2021. You and I both know these consultants that are saying that there. I am so sick of this. When it comes to the issue of pardons, when it comes to the issue of lawfare, Merrick Garland, Jack Smith, all these hooligans there, it is time to turn the tables and to not seek retribution, but to get justice. Justice for those who have so grossly upended our constitutional order and undermined our cherished rule of law in this country.
No doubt about it. Josh, my friend, as always, thank you, brother. Appreciate you. That was awesome. I feel better. I'm going to feel even better after lighting the mood. That's next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And so I figured to lighten the mood, we might as well go ahead and talk about my burgers once again. You see, if you go subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC, you can have loads and loads and loads of content just like this.
A cheeseburger. It's designed to put delicious meat with melty cheese on it. It's designed to deliver those two things into your mouth. Acceptable additions to a burger are, by the way, not pickles either. You pickle people are crazy. Now, hold on, Corey. Let me explain. I'm not anti-pickle, okay? I like pickles as much as the next man.
Why are you gay?
I wish I could take that back, but you understand what I'm saying. I'll eat a pickle. I'm fine. If the wife has some dill pickles at home, sometimes she gets them from the store, I'll Kamala down a dill pickle. I'm fine with it. When you put a pickle on a burger, it takes away from the big deal. The only acceptable additions to a burger are things that, in a way, complement the meat and the cheese. Where people go nuts is they start picking every little thing. I need lettuce. I need tomatoes. We need extra pickles on this. Should I get 8,000 onions? Then we need ketchup, mustard, and mayo, and then let's add some hot sauce to it. It didn't need any of that. You know what? Lima beans needs that.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.